Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, which today is Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators are in action tonight, taking on the red-hot Vancouver Canucks. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. All of your pregame coverage starting right here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game at 6 p.m. Joining us now is Mitch Light, who covers college football for The Athletic. Now, Mitch, we had a funky week last week, Titans on Monday Night Football, so we weren't able to catch up with you last week, but I will take this opportunity to take my Heisman Trophy victory lap. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm ready to move on to next year. I was fully ready to talk about it last Tuesday, and then Willie gave me the news that my services were not needed, so I've already looked at my last next year's contender, so you know, I choose to look forward, Caroline.
Your services were very much so missed last week, Mitch.
Congratulations. I did vote for Jaden Daniels.
All right.
I think Mitch, you knew exactly what to say when Caroline
You think I was going to come here and say I voted for like someone else? But we do that straw poll at The Athletic every week, and starting midseason. And I had Michael Penix Jr. kind of on mine most weeks. And I figured that as long as those two teams kept winning, and it's not just about winning, that I would, the winner of the Pac-12 championship game, you know, I'd probably go for that quarterback for the Heisman. But then, you know, two or three weeks in, just sort of had an epiphany, like a lot of voters did, I think, that, wow, I did not realize just how eye-popping the stats were for Jaden Daniels. And he was doing it on a good team and not a great team, and we all know the defense wasn't his issue. But it's like his passing stats by themselves – were amazing, and then he rushed for 1,200 yards or whatever it was. So it was truly statistically one of the best seasons we've seen from a quarterback.
It just makes it even more sad that the defense was just that bad. But I digress, Mitch.
You can't have it all, Caroline. You can't have it all.
I did have it all for that one year, man. Oh man, that was fun. That was fun. Looking at Tennessee, we haven't heard quite yet if Joe Milton will be playing in the bowl game against Iowa, which, side note, that matchup between Tennessee and Iowa, I think, is hilarious. But no word yet if Joe Milton is going to play in that game. What do you think is best for Joe Milton, and what do you think is best for Tennessee fans or maybe that Tennessee team in developing Nico for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I was usually I'm not a radio person in the morning, work from home, but this we're having car trouble, so we're down to one car. So I had to drive my wife to school today. She's a teacher, so I was driving home and, of course, listening to Joe Rexroad on the radio, as one does when they're in the car. And Joe was making the point that if he were Joe Milton's advisor, you know, Iowa's not the best defense to play against in the bowl game. And I understand what Joe was saying, but I was thinking to myself, if you're scared of going against Iowa's defense in the bowl game, like, what does that say about your prospects as an NFL quarterback? And it's maybe not Joe Milton making the decision, and Iowa clearly has one of the best defenses in the country. I'm not sure if they rank first, second, or third. I'm not sure. I get why he wouldn't play. For Tennessee's standpoint, you probably want to see Nico play. You know, it's still a difficult defense to go against. But it's some nice experience. You get all the preps as QB1 leading up to it. I'm sure he's getting a lot of practice reps anyway. So here's a scenario where the bowl game is interesting for the fan base when a lot of them have kind of checked out because they might have a chance to see the young quarterback play. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen there. But my guess is Joe Milton will not play.
Now, Mitch, do you think that Day's job, is he on a hot seat? Because this would be, what, the third year in a row that they've lost to Michigan. And, you know, this of any year should have been the year that Ohio State was going to beat Michigan. It seemed like they beefed up their defense. They became more physical, but yet still, it was a close game, but they still didn't beat Michigan. And we've seen another, you know, Ohio State coach years prior get fired for the same thing. Can't beat Michigan.
It's sort of like the definition of hot seat. Like, well, first of all, I think they're going to beat Michigan next year. I think Michigan loses a ton of players. They lose a lot of seniors. And so I think Ohio State, depending on who they have at quarterback, it's going to be well-positioned in that game. Like, so here's the way I look at it. Like, I don't think he's on the hot seat right now. I know he's lost those games, and you're hired at Ohio State to win those games. It's almost like if he doesn't win next year, especially if Michigan's not as talented, it's just like it's almost maybe time for like an amicable divorce on all sides. It's just it might get too toxic. And so you might say, okay, then he's on the hot seat, he's going to get fired. But like if I'm Ryan Day and I lose to Michigan for a fourth straight time and Like, do I really want to, like, subject myself to all of that ire from the fan base? So it's obviously an important year. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I know the schedule is not going to be similar. That's, you know, we none of us really like the realignment we're seeing, but when it's actually time for the games next year, we're gonna enjoy them. My point is, like, it's the past couple of years we've had to wait. They played Notre Dame, but other than that, we've had to wait basically 2 months for their big games on the schedule. Well, their schedule is going to be more difficult next year. There's going to be bigger tests early in the season. So it's not going to boil down to like a two-game season like it's been. But it's definitely going to be one of the storylines to watch starting next year.
Mitch, have you even thought about next year's realignment, one, but then also the playoff picture and how teams will be, how they're going to sort of stack teams in the playoffs? Have you even thought about that moving forward? Because, I mean, there's going to be a lot of change in a lot of teams. There may be teams that ends up getting into the playoffs, you know, with two, maybe even three losses. Have you even thought about what it will look like next year?
Sure. It's hard not to, like, watch games this year and look ahead next year. Like, I think the example we and everyone who kind of follows the sport, like, Penn State is, like, the poster child for a team that will benefit, or if it had been a 12-team playoff the past 6-7 years, would benefit. They would have made it like 3 or 4 times. They've come close a couple of years, but they just haven't made it. So I think teams like Penn State, it's going to benefit them, although their schedule will also get more difficult. And just thinking through this, it's going to be with the elite teams knowing that it's not such life or death with one game. And I don't know if this is going to happen, but like, let's say you got a banged up quarterback. In years past, you know, you might need to play him because you can't afford to lose that game. But if you're Ohio State, maybe, you know, you can get in with two losses, so each game's not as important. So I think we're going to see some of that, but it's definitely going to be different. I'm in favor of the 12-team playoff. I do appreciate the arguments about the, you know, diminishing the importance of the regular season for some teams. But I think those playoff buys are going to be so important too. The four teams not having to play that one game. So, you know, there still is a lot of pressure on those elite teams to have zero losses or one loss. And one thing I think we're going to see too is the fan bases of those teams that get the buys, they're going to love it, but they're going to miss a home game like this, the teams 5 through 8. I think that's going to be great, that first round with playoff games on campuses. Like, imagine a playoff game at Penn State in December when it's like, you know, 12 degrees and stuff. Some of those games are going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Now, does it take away the luster of the championship game, in-conference championship game?
It might, and it will in some regards. There's going to be certain scenarios where they're just not as important. And we've seen that a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, this year was a little different. The championship games were of paramount importance. The Washington-Oregon game was basically a play-in game for the playoffs, so that was great. It turned out that Georgia-Alabama was a play-in game. So it will, but I also think, like I just said, Derek, you know, for those teams fighting for a bye game, for a bye it's in the playoff, it's going to be huge too. So everyone, especially in the SEC and the Big Ten, everyone wants to win a championship. So the stakes might not be quite as high, but when we're settling in to watch those games on Championship Saturday next year, you know, I'll enjoy them just as much.
Mitch Light is with us. Mitch, it's just, we've been talking about this every time you come on, but the carousel of the quarterbacks, and it just doesn't it say so much that even Georgia had to wait and see if their quarterback was going to stay, and obviously he has, and he is eligible, I guess, for the draft, so that was part of the equation here, but it's amazing where you just don't know who's going where. So let's talk about a couple of guys. First, let's talk about the guy that Vanderbilt, it looks like they're honing in on to be their starter. Tell me about him.
Yeah, well, Nate Johnson committed from University of Utah, Southern California native, just finished his second year at Utah, was a top 300 or maybe top 250 national recruit. So he was a big-time recruit for Utah. And I remember we did a story, Bruce Feldman did a story on him from a camp that I edited a couple years ago. So it's sort of like, you know, I remember that story. So, you know, that's one thing I really enjoy about covering recruiting like I do now. I get to know these guys younger, and then when they get to college, I kind of know a lot about them. And he was a guy that, you know, they've had Cam Rising as their starter, but he's been hurt. So Johnson played some, a phenomenal athlete, really, really good runner, still developing as a passer. That's going to be his issue. You know, can he read defenses? He's got the, you know, they say the arm talent to throw the ball, but it's just about deciphering defenses. You know, he played under Andy Ludwig at Utah. And if you remember, you know, this is back when I was doing the sideline reporting for Vanderbilt, and I, you know, paid obviously close attention. When they went to Kyle Shermer as a true freshman, I remember just they really did not, or Andy Ludwig did not trust him to do much. So they, Ralph Webb was on the team that year. I think they ran the ball a lot early in that next year, sophomore year, very, very conservative. And then the kind of the light bulb went on. I think it was the game at Auburn one year, and they just let Shermer go. And then the next 2.5 years, he threw the ball all over the place. So when I was watching Nate Johnson play for Andy Ludwig this year as a redshirt freshman, I'm thinking there's a guy that the coordinator doesn't trust yet. They didn't really have him throw the ball a lot. So that'll be, you know, his task at Vanderbilt, getting more comfortable in the offense. You know, new offense coordinator has not been announced yet, but Tim Beck from New Mexico State, they had a dual-threat quarterback last year. Diego Pavia rushed for over 800 yards, I believe. So it seems to be a really good fit for what they want to run going forward.
How would you assess what's gone on overall? I know a lot of people that the Vanderbilt fans were excited about the future for have decided to hit the portal, but there's a lot of opportunities. I see a lot of names coming in. Any sense of whether they're, you know, stabilizing some? There's obviously a lot of opportunity out there, and you know they've got a lot of spots to fill. But how are they doing?
Yeah, I think it's been a positive last few good days. I think obviously from a net gains and losses, it's still at a net deficit. I mean, you know, London Humphrey's just committed to Georgia, obviously. So they lost some key guys. I think getting Taylor back on defense, you know, probably their best player, was very important there too. So there's still a long time to go in the portal. You know, guys have until January 2nd, I think the date is, to enter the portal, but they can commit any time after that. And then you've got the spring window. But the program is clearly, by necessity, is clearly signaled that they're going to use the transfer portal. So I think it's been a positive few days. Getting the quarterback that they wanted or that they pursued was a huge first step. Because if you, as we know, if you don't have a quarterback, you really got no chance. So they just
and the quarterback could probably lead to other players. Like, oh, they've got a quarterback that looks good. I'll go there.
Yeah, and I looked this up for something else I was doing. And I don't know how this compares to other programs, but in Clark Lee's 3 years, Vanderbilt has not had a quarterback start more than 6 straight games. You know, some of that's due to injury, but some of that's due to lack of consistency and stuff. You need stability at that position. Hey, Caroline, what do you think about
Shermer? Think about what Shermer did to stabilize.
Exactly.
You could argue he saved Derek Mason's tenure. He made Derek Mason somewhat successful because he had a stable guy like Shermer that came up and played so well.
Yeah.
No doubt. Have we gotten Caroline's thoughts, deep thoughts on A.J.
Well,
Swan?
Well, I did happen to get a text from Caroline last night letting me know that A.J. Swan is heading to LSU.
Yes.
You know, that was a change. Everyone thought he was going to South Carolina there. So, interesting. I not just because he played at Vanderbilt, guys, but I think he is one of the more interesting portal guys because he clearly has talent. He makes some great throws, but he makes some bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And some people say, oh, well, the talent around him. Clearly, the offensive line wasn't great, but he had good wide receivers at Vanderbilt this year. He made some throws where you're just like, what are you doing? So I hope it works out for him. He clearly has talent. I know he's got a bat. It's not like he's getting close to guaranteed a starting spot there. But I think he punched up or whatever the term is. I did not think he would land at a program like LSU.
Not on my bingo card, I'll tell you that.
Interesting. I got one more for you, Mitch,
sure.
And then these guys might want to sneak in a last one. But Chip Kelly had some very compelling comments about his vision, and he made the point that is so obvious to everybody, and that is, he goes, our football team playing in the Big Ten is one thing, but our softball team, our baseball team, they should be playing Arizona and Arizona State. This makes no sense at all. And he laid out a really interesting plan in about 90 seconds of what you could do, which would basically be a football-only division, and then everybody else do something that makes more sense geographically.
Yeah.
So what your thoughts on that? Do you think people will listen to him?
I mean, it's not an original thought. It's good to hear kind of a prominent voice like that. He did so succinctly. But, if you heard it, he kept saying, not that I thought about this.
Right.
he kept saying that. Like, in the past few years, this is what I thought. It's like football, it's a different animal. It's a different sport. There are so many logistical hurdles. You know, there's Title IX involved in that. Like, how do volleyball teams afford to do that, but, you know, if football's something different, but if it's still sponsored by the school, then obviously they still have that revenue there. So I am in favor of football breaking off because it's, you know, we've written stories, we've done a lot about, oh, UCLA's got to go play at Rutgers, ha-ha, like in football, that's a pain, how do you get the equipment there? But, you know, you've traveled with the football team, Willie, I have to, you know, it's pretty good travel. You know, if you do it two, three
yeah,
times a year,
football
you
is
get
a
over
totally
it.
Different thing.
Yeah.
It's the other sports. It's Stanford basketball going to play at Miami, at Florida State, and at Clemson. You know, gone for a week there. So I don't know if we'll get there. But I thought Chip Kelly that those were wise words, and the more people say it, I guess the more chance it has of coming to fruition at some point.
But that just shows you football reigns supreme. It's like we're making decisions based upon our football program and no one else. That's basically what it's saying to everybody.
Money.
It is the thing. It's what I mean. I've said this. It's with all this realignment stuff. It's one of those things where everyone involved knows it's a bad idea, but we can't stop ourselves, and it just happens.
Mitch, last one for me. I kind of viewed this era of transfer portal NIL like the rich getting richer. But I look at programs like Texas A&M that are losing players to the transfer portal at an alarming rate. Ohio State lost Kyle McCord and several of other of their starters. And big programs across the country, there are a lot of players that are entering the transfer portal, and it's more than just natural attrition. And then I look at programs like Ole Miss that are sweeping up in the transfer portal. That might land Walter Nolan, the number one defensive player in the country. Look at Missouri recruiting in high school and in the transfer portal, getting some of the top players in the country. I don't look at Ole Miss and Missouri as some of the richest teams in all of college football. So could this really be giving college football the parity that maybe we've been looking for over the last, you know, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, very good point. And the same teams are still at the top of the recruiting rankings, but that's okay as long as they're not hoarding as much of the talent. There was like a 4 or 5 year run there where like Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, and whatever, we're getting like literally like 50 or 60 of the top 100 players, like those five schools. It just needs to be spread out a little bit more. And that's what maybe, you know, two top 75 guys going to Missouri when they would have been going to Georgia. You know, some other schools getting kids as well. That will help. You know, I don't know if we'll ever get to parity, but just every kid who doesn't go to Georgia or doesn't go to Alabama and goes to a rival school will help. But then also, like, Ole Miss is the perfect example. They are not a powerhouse recruiting school. They don't recruit in the higher than the 20s, but they've done a very, very good job in the transfer portal, especially this year. They are making a go for it. You probably talked about it. You've seen their schedule. Mm-hmm. If they can stay healthy next year and everything molds the way they think it can, they can make a real run for it. So, yes, I'm with you too, Caroline. Like, I thought NIL, okay, same teams are just going to get richer. They're going to dominate even more. We have not seen that. How far it swings the other way, we still don't know.
Are you looking forward to the Pop-Tart Bowl coming up here in just a couple of days, Mitch?
Of course.
Residence Technologies Independence Bowl, perhaps?
I'm looking at the bowl slate here, and there are games coming up. That's what I'll say.
There are games. The Scooters Coffee Frisco Bowl is tonight, UTSA at Marshall.
Man, why do you got to give it such a long name?
It is. It's like a NASCAR car. Yes. It's like a stock car. You got stickers all over it.
You guys are talking to the person who was at the first ever Garden State Bowl. The first of three.
I have, Mitch, we might have been at the same game as a kid. I have a Navy, I guess, toque is what you would call it in Canada, just a winter hat, you know, from a Garden State Bowl. It was Rutgers Navy, is that right?
It was, imagine Rutgers in more than one Garden State Bowl. It was 1978 Garden State Bowl, Arizona State, Rutgers. My friend's parents went to Arizona State. They called me about an hour, my parents, about a half hour before they were leaving, said, "We got an extra ticket. We'll take Mitch as long as he cheers for Arizona State." So I went. I don't think Barry Bonds or Reggie Jackson were playing for Arizona State back then, but I think Arizona State won.
The Garden State Bowl.
I'm sure Arizona State fans were thrilled about going to New Jersey in January.
Oh, yes, that had to be huge. Broadway play?
I know. Here's another bowl. It's already been played.
I can't remember the weather. I'm guessing it wasn't like 75 and sunny. It was probably about 90 and sunny.
Wind swirling in the Meadowlands. No question.
How about the avocados from Mexico Cure Bowl?
Oh, it was a great game. It was a great game. I did watch it the other night.
13-9. There we go.
I like avocados.
Yeah, who doesn't?
Good for you. Super food.
Everybody does.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Healthy fats. Mitch Light covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you as always. Glad to get you back this week, and we'll chat with you soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. Yep. Appreciate it. Mitch Light, he is the very best. Appreciate him for joining us, as he does every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Coming up next, it's been too long. We got to talk about the red freaking hot Predators, 13-3-0 in their last 16. What's been the key for the Preds, and how do they continue that against a really, really good Vancouver team tonight? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.